From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about prostate cancer, more information, whether or not you really should be screened or not screened, and is there money in the system for screening? In other words, what does it actually mean, and who has their hands in the financial pockets? And we're going to talk about health and tanning booths and colleges, some new information that may help you determine whether or not you're going to go and get that tan before you go south for the winter.
And I'm going to go out on a limb, Zorba, and guess that we have a recipe today.
You bet. You bet. Going out on a limb makes a difference. We have Persian spiced chicken with spaghetti squash. It is a delicious recipe. You will like it.
I have not eaten spaghetti squash in many years. I'm looking forward to this one. All right, to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Arnett, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you today?
Oh, I was just wondering, biting midges, no-see-ums, calicoidesferens. I'm not a scientist or anything, but I just wanted to know if those little critters could cause summer itch in humans.
Oh, you mean the little little insects that we call no-see-ums,
yes,
which
sir.
Means we don't see them.
Right.
I mean, that's what they... that's
and you also said biting midges, and what was the other one?
Well, I think their scientific name is calicoidesferens, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, well, you know when it comes to science, none of us are linguists.
Right. So you're one. So do you have a problem? You have summer allergies, rashes that you think might be the bugs might be the culprit?
I'm pretty sure that they're the culprit.
Uh-huh.
Never had allergies in my life.
Uh-huh. So what kind of symptoms do you have? Tell me about them.
I guess I'll give you a little background. I remodel houses.
Okay.
And I got into one particularly nasty bathroom.
Oh.
That had the mold and, stuff under the floor, moisture set up for over a year.
Oh, wow.
I had to remodel this thing, and so I don't think I took the proper precautions. And what I'm thinking is maybe I lowered my immune system because I went to the doctor and he told me I had mold growing in my lungs.
Wow.
They gave me antibiotics. And soon after that, I started experiencing allergies.
So you went to the doctor. A doctor said you had mold growing in your lungs. How did the doctor make that diagnosis?
He took some blood, a couple of days later, he told me I had to take these antibiotics that I possibly had mold patches in my lungs.
Yeah. Did he take a chest x-ray at all?
No, sir.
I don't think you can make the diagnosis of whether or not you have mold in your lungs from a blood test. I don't think you actually can secure a diagnosis with that. You need a chest x-ray. You need to actually get other fluid out of the lungs. We do think that mold affects the lungs. I have no doubt about it, but I don't really buy the mold in there.
Okay.
On the other hand, working in a dirty bathroom with stuff undoubtedly has mold that you breathe in, and there are lots of issues with mold. In fact, a lot of researchers think that chronic sinus infections come from different molds and fungi that actually live in our sinuses. So the reality is what you're doing at your job in prevention really makes a difference. Were you wearing a mask when you were doing this? I assume you weren't, but were you wearing anything?
No, sir.
Okay, so what you want to do in the future is you want to get a mask that prevents you against mold. And there are different kinds of masks. There's a mask that has an N99. N99 is the type of mask that actually filters out everything, including tuberculosis. I mean, they're hot. When you wear them, they're hot. They may be a little bit hot, but if you're in the middle of all this dust and the mold, it's going to keep stuff from going into your lungs, and that's really important.
Well, when I did the bathroom, I think I might have brought them home. So there was a lot of them in that bathroom, and I put, insect repellent?
DEET.
Mm-hmm. Sprayed DEET, and then the candles and all that,
the citronella
the barrier,
candles.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, and the barrier sprays, and just to keep them away so I could do the job. And I wound up getting pretty sick, and after that, then I started experiencing the insect bites that I've never experienced before. And I've worked on a rig for 20-something years outside, 24/7, fit as a fiddle. I don't drink. I don't smoke. And all of a sudden, I have these allergies. So,
No. That can be bothersome. And actually, what you talk about is a major issue because we think that some autoimmune diseases may be kicked off from our body's reaction to a whole bunch of things that we don't understand well. Molds, fungi, candida that's around, all these other things may actually kick off changes in the immune response. So I've got a recommendation. Number one. Get an antihistamine, non-sedating, over-the-counter, generic, they're all generic, Claritin, Zyrtec, or Allegra. Start on that every single day. That's what I would do. In the morning, take an antihistamine. At bedtime, 25 milligrams of Benadryl or 50 milligrams of Benadryl, Tylenol PM generic, has it in there, or just generic Benadryl. At bedtime, I do that for a month, see what happens. That'll reduce your immune response. That can make a difference. If it doesn't work, what you add is one more drug, and that is Zantac, over-the-counter. Counter Zantac, 150 milligrams once or twice a day can also have a benefit because that's an H1 reducer. It's also a histamine reducer. It's histamine in the stomach, but it has some spillover. I would try that. The next thing I would do, if you've got these things in your house, you need an exterminator. You need to have somebody come in the house and see where these bugs are coming from because if they're around, they're not just coming out of your body. They're coming from somewhere else.
I think they kind of hitch a ride, I guess, if you will.
I think you're right. They may have hitched a ride, but they are propagating. They're not propagating in your lungs. They're propagating somewhere else. So non-sedating antihistamine in the morning.
Like your Claritin types.
Sedating antihistamine, the Benadryl at bedtime, 1 month. Let us know what happens. I think this will help.
Allergy pills, and make sure you wear a good mask.
N99.
All right. Good luck to you. And those are all allergy medications you were talking
about. Yeah, they're allergy. And he's having some reaction to the no-see-ums. You know, that's a.
I don't want to see them. I don't want to feel them, I guess, is what I don't want. Mosquitoes around here are bad enough. Well, thank you so much for that call. If you have a question for Zorba, call in now at 1-800-462-7413. One of our topics today, Zorba, comes down to that eternal question. This is a big question lately, to screen or not to screen.
Right. So before that, I want to mention something that I found interesting. There are ads around my city, Madison, Wisconsin. I've also seen them in other cities from radiation centers with guys up there sitting there saying, ask your doctor. Meaning, when you look at the ad, it's ask your doctor to be screened. Well, if it's a guy, you know it's not cervical cancer and it's probably not colon cancer. It's obviously prostate cancer. And that's because radiation is one of the treatments for prostate cancer. So the issue is the U.S. Public Service Task Force had given screening prostate cancer a flunking grade. They've said there's more harm than good. Why is that and where's the data? And there's a study that recently came out of the British Medical Journal out of the UK, so out of Great Britain. They followed 6,000 men, roughly 6,000 men, over a more than a 10-year period. Okay, group number one, you know, they all got screened. Okay, they all got screened. They all had prostate cancer by screening. None had prostate cancer spread. Okay, group number one received radiation. Group number two received surgery, prostate surgery. Group number three was watchful waiting. So in other words, they watch it and don't do anything unless it shows prostate cancer is spread. Okay, at the end of 10 years, there was a reduction. The ones who had radiation and surgery had a reduction of prostate cancer that had spread, and roughly a 50% reduction, okay, over a 10-year period. Now, before we go into the reduction, they also had 30 to 35% of them had side effects that lasted for up to 3 to 5 years. Erectile dysfunction, in other words, guys who are 50, erectile dysfunction, they can't have sex, that's a big side effect. Dribbling. Incontinence, roughly 30 to 35% that lasted for many up to 3 to 5 years. For some, it didn't. They had to wear diapers or they had to wear a pad. Now, the ones, once again, they hadn't spread. When you look over a 10-year period, the real question is, who lived longer? Now, the ones who lived longer, there was no group was any different. So the radiation group, the surgery group, and the watchful waiting group, there was no difference on who lived longer. The difference was the fact that some of them had a spread of prostate cancer, in which case they then received treatment. So the bottom line with this is every guy who is interested in screening should discuss it with their doctor. The U.S. Public Service Task Force has said, we don't see any difference in the death rate, and therefore we don't recommend screening. But then you've got this other side, which I will call the medical industrial complex. Now, I'm a doctor, so I'm part of it. I can't get away from it. That says screen, 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 screen is good. But the reality is it's not always good.
Right. And this feels, I think, counterintuitive to me a little bit. And I hear this from a lot of people whenever I talk about this, the idea, well, if I have something I want to know right away and I want to get it dealt with. But as you say, when you look at the research, leaving it alone might not be any worse than tackling it in some
cases. If there's no difference in the death rate,
right.
And that's it. If there's no difference in the death rate, do you really want to suffer erectile dysfunction and dribbling when there's no difference in the death rate? Mm-hmm. Now, it is more, you may, 20,000 men a year die of prostate cancer. So believe me, it's a cancer that's there. But we don't have a way yet of differentiating the prostate cancer that can spread from the prostate cancer that is indolent.
There's the thing. Yeah, right. You get a positive result. That doesn't mean it's going to be bad for you in the long run. That doesn't mean it's going to be the thing that kills you.
You take a 65-year-old man, if you look at his prostate, there's a 50% chance that he has a focus of prostate cancer in there, but most of it simply stays there and doesn't do anything. And that's the whole issue involving this. Prostate cancer screening has always been a very sensitive topic. It's not like screening for colon cancer, which we know helps, screening for breast cancer, which we know helps. But for example, we don't screen for lung cancer, and 60% of all cancer deaths are from lung cancer. So I think it's very important to take a seasoned approach for guys to discuss it with their doctor and make an individual decision.
Is there a case where maybe if I know in my family we've had particularly aggressive cases of, say, prostate cancer, that might make me a better candidate to want to get that screening?
Well,
or no,
I'll give a good example. I have a guy his dad died of prostate cancer. I said, do you want a PSA test? He said, yes. The PSA test was elevated. He ended up getting biopsied. He ended up having his prostate removed. He now has chronic pelvic pain. He has erectile dysfunction, and he is dribbling. And he said to me the other day when I saw him in the office, he said, well, you said, you talked me out of screening. I'm really sorry that I got screened for this thing because I'm 55 years of age and I've got these symptoms. And now you're telling me there's no evidence that I'm going to live longer than anyone else. And I said, well, you had the screening. You did what anyone would do when you find it. Most people are going to say, well, treat it. But the reality is this study shows watchful waiting works.
Let's go back to our callers now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. I love your show.
Thank you.
Like a lot of people from Wisconsin, I also love dairy.
I'm with you.
I just wanted your opinion regarding the non-fat dairy versus the whole milk dairy, because my LDLs are pretty high.
How high?
And about 180, 190.
Yeah, that's pretty high. Uh-huh. Heart disease in your family?
Not really strokes.
Uh-huh.
That's heart disease, I guess.
Yeah. How old were they when they got strokes?
It's actually my grandparents died of strokes, but my father is 94.
Good, good. Okay. What's your HDL? What's your good cholesterol?
I don't have that. It's pretty good.
Pretty good. Okay. Pretty good could be 35 or 40. Very good could be 65 or 70.
I think it's higher than 35.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, what kind of milk are you drinking now?
So about 10 months ago, actually, I started to get healthy, and I switched to all whole milk dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Whole milk, yogurt, sharp cheddar cheese, and I eat a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my LDLs went down.
Mm-hmm.
They went down to 130. Of course, I'm doing a lot of other things.
I was going to say, it's not just the dairy, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm a big advocate of whole milk dairy. But
let's talk about dairy fat. First of all, moderation is the key here. We've been on the low-fat bandwagon for a long time. And the reality is moderation is what counts. So if you have a container of yogurt that is full-fat yogurt, that's okay. If you have four containers of full-fat yogurt, that's not okay. If you're going to have a glass of whole milk and your lipids are okay, that might be fine. We've moved to 2% and 1% skim milk frankly, I can't stand. I mean, I don't drink skim milk.
It's
and 1% is not my favorite. 2% I find just fine. When I drink whole milk, I feel like I'm drinking cream because I'm not used to it. But once again, there's a moderation. I don't think it's a fat issue. I don't think there's any difference in the chemical aspect of it. And I don't think it had a bad rep because basically we know that if you drink too much of it, it's really not good for your lipids. But I think we may have gone to the extreme and said you can't have any of it. So how much do you drink a day?
Well, I drink about a cup of whole milk, and mm-hmm. then I eat about mm-hmm. 2 cups of mm-hmm. whole milk yogurt, and I eat a lot of sharp cheddar cheese, almost 2 ounces a day.
Okay. So, you know, you're on the high end of that. I want to talk about the cholesterol. They vary by 10 to 15% around the mean. So you can be up one time, down the next time, up one time, down the next time. That's only one factor in heart disease. Do you smoke cigarettes?
Nope.
Do you exercise?
I have been in the last 10 months.
Yay.
Excellent.
Good.
That's a major part. That may be why your lipids went down. How's your weight compared to your height? Is it pretty good? How would you grade it?
Well, I lost 35 pounds in the last 10 months.
So you bring up a really good point. Some people, by going to a diet that has more fat, will lose weight because they're more satisfied eating. And we've mm-hmm. been on the anti-fat bandwagon. Which has led a lot of people to eating more sugar and carbohydrates, and that may have been a reduction. If you're exercising and you're losing weight and your lipids are better and you're drinking whole milk, I think I'd continue doing what you're doing.
Let me ask, do you eat the cheese right before you're in Green Bay, right before a Packer game, and do they win when you eat cheese?
Absolutely.
Okay, well then I recommend you definitely continue eating that good sharp cheddar right before kickoff every day.
You mean eating cheese is good luck for the Packers.
Hey, whatever works.
I alone control the destiny of the Green Bay Packers.
I love it. Well, thank you so much. Congratulations on getting that exercise started, and maybe enjoy that little bit of cheese, especially before the big game.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, I love hearing that. I'm glad she's got the exercise. I wanted to invite callers who have made a change like that, gotten exercise going or quit the smoking habit.
I also want to invite callers who control the destiny of the Packers.
Well,
I want to invite all of them to come to the show. Join our Facebook page at ZorbaPastor.org. Because, frankly, if eating cheese in the state makes them win,
I think
5 million Wisconsinites should have a little bit of cheddar cheese prior to the game.
Share your story about changing a health habit or trying and not getting there yet. Maybe we have some inspiration for you. Call in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email comes to us from a listener named Susan. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, it's like chalk on a blackboard for English teachers and writers to hear this one, popularly used on shows like yours. People and attitudes are healthy, but vitamins, food, exercise, etc. are healthful, promoting good health. We English teachers laugh our heads off hearing people say, oh, good for you, you're eating that healthy banana. We want to reply, yes, it hasn't had a cold or a flu for months." Right, I have thoughts on this one, Zorba, but let's hear what you think.
No, your thoughts. I want your thoughts first. Your thoughts.
So this is one of those that I'm okay with people saying healthy. I'm not an English teacher. Yeah. I'll put that right out there. Well, everybody knows what you mean when you say healthy. We know that we're not talking about the condition of that banana. Mm-hmm. And also, I kind of... Mm-hmm. In my day job, collect hard-to-say words. Uh-huh. Healthful.
It's hard to say.
You combine that TH and the F sound.
Healthful.
How often does that happen? It's a terrible word. I want it to go away.
Well, my belief is that language is fluid.
Right.
And for the English teachers out there who are stuck, who are priggish and stuck, I use the word prig finally in a sentence I've been trying.
I do not endorse that message.
And are stuck into old-fashioned. It's just like my English teacher, Miss Judy in grammar school, who said, don't talk talk about children as kids. That's the wrong word. Kid is a baby goat. And I remember thinking, no, not at all. And now, once it's in Webster's Dictionary, it's supposedly true. Well, who has a Webster's Dictionary anymore, unless you get it online? So I may say healthful, but you know what? I'm probably going to continue to say healthy. But thank you so much for listening.
I probably will, too. Do you have a healthy question about healthful endeavors? We'd love to hear it. Just post it to Facebook or send us an email at
our healthy website, zorbapastor.org.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for the good doc. But before we get back to the phones, it is recipe time again, Zorba, and we have quite a good recipe this week.
That's right. Persian spiced chicken with spaghetti squash.
I want to say at the outset, Zorba, this sounds really good.
It is really good. Really good. And it's really good with lots of different spices. If you love spicy things, this is a wonderful recipe. And it takes a little bit longer. Some of our recipes are short. Some are a little bit longer. But a longer recipe with lots of spice can give you this incredible taste to it.
Maybe make this one on the weekend. Takes a little more
time. Oh, you definitely make this. Oh, you wouldn't make it in the middle of the week. Unless you had the day off.
Yeah, maybe. And spaghetti squash is a weird thing.
Well, spaghetti squash is weird, and we don't use it enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I must admit, I don't cook spaghetti squash all the time. My daughter, Dee Dee, cooks it all the time. She said it's good. It's healthy. It's a different type.
Healthful.
It's a vegetable. It's healthful. It's not going to happen.
Might be healthy,
it's
too.
It's not going to happen. It's healthful. No, it's not going to happen.
Spaghetti squash has a bad cough.
I don't know. No, that's it. Healthy is easier to pronounce than healthful.
I agree.
You know, well, maybe I get dispensation because I can't say healthful as much because I spit when I get to the word
healthful.
So let's start.
Let's cook this
thing. Okay, so start with one medium, spaghetti squash, have lengthwise and seeded. Got to take out the seeds.
A medium spaghetti squash, have it lengthwise and get those seeds out.
That's it. 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt.
1.5 little tea kosher salt.
A medium red onion peeled and quartered.
A medium red onion peeled and quartered.
Okay, 2 teaspoons of ground turmeric.
2 teaspoons turmeric.
Teaspoon and a half of allspice. 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper.
1/4 little tea cayenne.
4 chicken legs, thighs, and drumsticks.
4 chicken legs, that's the thigh and drumstick all together.
4 tablespoonfuls of olive oil. 2 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice.
2 big tea fresh lemon juice, that's going to be nice.
Now, molasses. If you can get pomegranate molasses, it has a different flavor, but 1 tablespoon of any molasses will do. 1/2 cup of roasted salted pistachios.
1/2 cup of roasted salted pistachios. We're going to chop these, fine, though.
Yeah, that's right. 1/3 cup of pomegranate seeds. You're going to take out the seeds of a pomegranate.
1/3 cup of pomegranate seeds.
And 1/4 cup of dill and mint.
1/4 cup each of dill and mint. This is fresh stuff chopped up?
Fresh stuff chopped up.
Wow, this sounds great already.
It's really good. Okay, so here's how we make it. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees, then line a rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper. Sprinkle each half of the squash with 1/4 teaspoon of salt, then place it face down on the baking sheet along with the quartered onions. Now, combine the turmeric, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, teaspoon of allspice, 1/8 teaspoon of cayenne in a large bowl. Add the chicken, toss it and coat it. Arrange the chicken skin side up along the squash and onions on the baking sheet. Brush the top of the chicken with 1 tablespoonful of olive oil and bake until the interior of the squash and onions are fork tender and the chicken is crispy. So the chicken, you've got to put a thermometer in. It's got to be about 165 degrees. So this is going to be about 45 minutes. If the chicken is done before the squash. The squash takes a long time. Take that chicken out. But frankly, I would leave it all in because the chicken dark meat, it's really hard to overdo dark meat. Meanwhile, whisk the lemon juice, pomegranate molasses or regular molasses, and the remaining 3 tablespoonfuls of olive oil, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of allspice, 1/8 teaspoon of cayenne in a large bowl. Now, here is our next step. Finely chop the onion quarters. Transfer them to a bowl with the dressing. Using a fork, scrape the squash crosswise in order to get the strands from the shells into the bowl. Remember, it's a spaghetti sauce. You kind of pull it out with a fork.
That's the fun part.
Into the bowl. That is the fun part. It's fun to do with your kids. You could probably do this with your kids. With the dressing, discard the shells. You're only using that part. Add the pistachios, pomegranate seeds, dill, and mint. Toss it to go. Divide the chicken into different plates, top with the dill and mint, serve alongside the squash mixture, and you have a divine dinner to serve on Saturday night with your guests. They will be impressed, not only with the flavor, but the presentation.
I promise
that you will get points. You will get points for this.
Yeah, this is going to look great, too. So if somebody wants to make this, they probably didn't get all that.
Absolutely.
If you so go is there somewhere they can find that?
It's hard for me to imagine, but if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, and you can find that through your computer, through the magic of the web, the World Wide Web, www. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through that newfangled thing called Facebook.
Facebook, too. All right. Well, back to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Joining us now is a listener in Mendocino, California. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you out today?
Well, I'm a older skateboarder, and I just recently suffered a strange injury to my Achilles tendon. And it's strange in that it's actually stemmed from a different injury to my wrist. I injured my wrist earlier in the year, skateboarding, and it derailed my yoga practice, which included a series of, the sun salutations. So I was stretching my Achilles tendon regularly, and then when I injured my wrist, I can't do the downward dog anymore. So I just sort of gave it up without thinking about it and stayed off my board for a while. And then my wrist felt good. I was like, okay, I'm going to go skate again. I jumped on my board. I did one ollie, and I felt something pop in my Achilles tendon, followed by a burning sensation and pain. Mm-hmm. So
now, before we get into the injury itself, I want to ask, you said you're an older skateboarder. Now, in some circles, that might mean 50. In some, it might mean 22.
I'm a lot closer to the 50. I'm 46.
Okay.
So basically, first of all, you do yoga, you do stretching. You know, as you said, you've got the wrist injury, which prevented some yoga stretches that you were doing. And then you've got this Achilles. You felt the burning within that tendon. How are you walking right now? And how long ago did this injury actually occur?
It happened about a month ago or so. Well, it happened a little longer ago than that. And I have been seeing improvement.
What have you been doing during this improvement? Have you been staying away from stretches, or are you still doing them?
Well, I worked into it very slowly.
Good.
Because I immediately, I hadn't resumed that part of the yoga thing. I was really just, I had kind of forgotten about it, and I hadn't replaced it with something else. So that's how that injury happened. And then I hadn't really, so then after I injured my Achilles, I couldn't do that. So
right.
I was trying to just test the flexing of it,
and
I am moving into it more slowly because in the mornings I feel a little bit more tenderness there.
Right. What it sounds like you have is a partial tear of the Achilles tendon. I mean, you have the burning sensation. Everything you're describing fills with it. If it were a complete tear of the Achilles tendon, you wouldn't be able to do what you're doing. When you have an injury, either a bony injury, ligamentous injury, muscle injury, it takes 3 months to heal. That's kind of the rule of thumb. 3 months, you'll get 90% healing, 75%, 80%, maybe 90%. But it's another 3 months before you get complete healing. Sometimes a serious injury can take 6 months to fully heal. Now, when you're 8 years old, it doesn't take that long. When you're 12 years old, it doesn't take that long. When you're 40-some years old, it kind of takes that long. So, so you want to play to the gold. The basic thing is you don't want it to develop from a partial tear to a complete tear. So I think what you should do is a few things. First of all, Ankle stretches are great. Doing it with yoga or going to YouTube and looking at ankle stretches, all you do is on YouTube, you do ankle stretches, physical therapy, and there'll be a bunch of things that'll pop up. We'll also put it on our website, zorbapastor.org, some YouTube videos that I would recommend. I'll put at least one up there.
Okay.
Because these stretches
great.
Are good. They're really good. And you do them in the morning after you wake up. It doesn't have to be the first thing in the morning, because what happens is over the first 30 minutes in the morning, your joints and ligaments warm up. That's not literally what happens, but there's something about after you're stiff in bed and you move around in the morning, it's better not to do these stretching exercises, I think, instantly. It's better to move around a little bit and then do them, because you'll get a little bit more out of it. Twice a day with stretching exercises, 3 to 5 minutes in the morning, 3 to 5 minutes in the evening are going to make a difference. That's number one. Number two, don't put yourself at risk. You may be bored, but don't put yourself at risk. If you know doing an ollie early on is going to make it more likely that something like this is going to happen. So you may not want to do as many ollies or do an ollie at all until you're 12 weeks post-injury. You want to give the muscle, or rather the ligaments and the muscles that may be abused, a chance to heal. So you can continue bored until you become bored with boarding.
Well, that's better than it's tough. It's tough not to, you know, when you get to be my age, you go to the skate park with the body you have, maybe not the body you want.
I got a question for you. So you're in the skate park, which tends to be a rather young sport. What do they do when you're in the skate park? I want to get the picture of what these teenagers are doing when you're on your board.
So when I started during the Reagan administration,
that's a long time ago.
Oh yeah, it was. An old skateboarder was like 17, and a really old one was like 20. And now I go to the skate park and I'm skating with kids. I'm older than their parents. I mean, I almost never get kicked out of when I'm skateboarding at, like, I've skated a lot. I used to live in Madison, and I've skated a lot around the university, and I feel like security guards don't even throw me out anymore. They're younger than me, and they just kind of feel sorry for me, I think.
Call
they're
you,
like,
sir.
Poor old man out here. So it's worked to my advantage in that way, but I still got it. You know, I'm jumping around and stuff, and I'd like to keep it, so I'm going to take it a little easy here.
Exactly. And you bring up a really good point, because back in the day, you know, when you got to a certain age, you did not exercise. I happen to like skiing. I love skiing. I'm getting ready for another ski trip that I'm going on. But back in the day, after you were 50 years of age, you never thought about going down the hill. And the reality is you should keep up your sport as long as you can, because look good, feel good, play good makes you good. So I love what you're doing. Keep it up.
Good luck on that recovery.
That's great advice. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye. Do you have a question for Zorba? Join in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413, no matter what age you are. Well, before we take a break, Zorba, let's pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and tackle an email question. This one came to us from an anonymous listener. Hi, Dr. Zorba. I am 14 years old and in ballet and gymnastics. I have two questions. Number one, I want to be able to do point, but I'm only 4'11" and not fully developed. What can I do to get the flexibility to do point? My feet are fine, I think, but any advice outside of my cruel ballet teacher, this is why she's anonymous, I guess, would be helpful.
Cruel or cool?
Cruel. Cruel. Now, we'll get to that in a minute. Number two, Tom Clark. She writes, sounds a lot like Adam West. Yes, I'm a Batman fan. So this is the TV show Batman. He sounds like Batman. I've worked with Tom a long time, Zorba. So have you.
I've never thought of Tom Clark as Adam West. And when you look at Tom Clark, you don't think Adam West.
Well, really, no.
He does not look like Adam West. Maybe he did back in his younger days. Don't think so.
Let me put this to you. Have you ever seen Tom Clark and Batman in the same room at the same time?
Never. And I've never seen Tom Clark in a Batman costume. You know, that is the other thing.
Well, because he wouldn't want us to know. So, all right, let's see. So, point. Now, what do you know? Are you a ballet guy? Do you know what point means?
I think it's when they're on their toes.
I think it's they're up on
they're
their toes.
Pointing with their toes.
Pointing,
that's
yeah.
Right. And she wants to know how she can do point.
How she can be more flexible. So she wants to boost flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things you do with your cruel ballet teacher is you ask her about how you improve flexibility. And then it's a matter of range of motion activity. But the reality is she is a young child. She's young. Flexibility is usually better in younger people. But some people are more flexible than others. And frankly, some become better ballerinas because they're more flexible. However, you can take whatever you have, you can improve your flexibility through active range of motion activities. And we'll post something on the Zorba Pastor website, zorbapastor.org, which she can maybe refer to for flexibility for ballet teachers. I will look through YouTube archives and I will find something, I promise.
Now, I know little or nothing about ballet, but I know sometimes with youth activities, sports and things like that, there are things that development people say, hold off. Like kids, pitchers throwing mm-hmm. curveballs. Uh-huh. They say, wait, mm-hmm. you're not developed enough. You could actually do damage. I don't know if point in ballet is one of those cases, but that might be worth checking out.
I don't know. The real question is, what is the cruel ballet teacher going to say if she's not doing point well enough? That's what it, and what is the mother? What are the mother and father? I was going to say, what would the mother say? But then I decided that was sexist. What would the mother and father say about her? I mean, maybe they want her to be a ballet in the Bolshoi or in some other American ballet, and they're just making sure that she does that. I'll find out. We'll look at it. We'll post information.
Get some range of motion exercise on the website in the meantime.
That is acceptable for her and acceptable for her age.
Do you have a question for Zorba? He's always happy to help out. Just post it to our Facebook page or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic and our medical MythBuster segment. It's all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another caller, we have another topic.
That's right. Tanning beds. Have you ever gone to a tanning bed?
I'll let you guess. Do I look like I've ever gone to a tanning bed?
No, you don't look like you have. But I used to go to tanning beds.
Never.
I remember when tanning beds first came out and went to a tanning bed. And I have a family history of melanoma. And once I was in my 20s. And then when it got to be like in my 30s, I thought, well, how dumb and stupid was that, laying in the sun with a history of melanoma? Well, tanning beds have the idea of you can go into a tanning bed and it's safe and it's effective and it's going to give you a tan and there are no side effects. Well, it turns out that some colleges make tanning beds even easy because you can use your college debit card that your mommy and daddy give you. So you can buy food in college, you can buy a tanning bed, and you can get melanoma and other forms of skin cancer as part of your college education.
Right. This new investigative report, this is from USA Today. They went around and checked out a bunch of college campuses. This is, we're in tanning bed season now, yeah. I guess. There's no more. Yeah.
They found that roughly one out of eight top ranked colleges had tanning beds in their debit cards that students could use.
Campus card. I could use it at the snack place over here.
You can get something healthy. You can get a tan.
I can get a tanning bed.
And the other thing is, the estimation from the CDC is that there is a tremendous amount. They think there are up to 400,000 cases of skin cases in the U.S. every year that come from tanning beds. Right. Skin cancer that come from tanning beds. Now, the Tanning Bed Society of America, whatever the official name says, no, you're wrong. They're not 400,000 cases. Well, maybe they're wrong. Maybe there are 200,000 cases that are actually occurring from tanning beds. But I think the issue is that tanning beds are not taken seriously as a form, as a potential form of cancer that you're forming for yourself. Now, spray-on tanning, by the way, that has become much more popular, has no risk at all. It's basically a dye that goes on your skin that makes you look the way you want to look. I mean, it's a cosmetic. That's a different issue.
Maybe the key here is to change our idea. We have this idea that a tan looks healthier or healthful.
In our society, mm-hmm. that it looks healthy. If you go to Asian societies and you look at people who are middle class, the first thing they do when they go outside is women have a parasol so they don't get a tan, because in those societies, tanning is associated with less money and a lower class. In our society, tanning is associated with leisure activity. So what shall we do about it? Well, first of all, I think if you're going to a tan tanning bed and you think it's safer than going out in the sun, you are wrong. If you're using a tanning bed in the winter and using sunscreen in the summer, don't do a tanning bed in the winter. If you want to have a tan, go and use a spray-on tan. And the other thing is, let's get rid of the debit cards connected to a tanning bed. It's bad for your health.
We'll go back to our callers now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to Manhattan. Hi.
Hi. Zorba, this is my question. For many years, I've taken the regular multivitamin, and I take fish oil vitamins and sometimes biotin, and I went away for several days, and I forgot my vitamins, and I noticed I'm not tired. And when I started taking them, I get tired again from taking vitamins. Now, let me just add that I do take a very small amount of lithium and a thyroid pill every day, too. But can vitamins make you tired?
First of all, we have to look at that. Fish oil and vitamins per se and biotin are probably not going to affect your mood. On the other hand, the real question is, what do they do for us? And are they really useful? Now, if you look at the data right now for middle-aged people and older, there's no evidence that vitamins, fish oil, or biotin actually improve your health. Now, one of the issues that I've struggled with is the fact people will say, well, I don't eat well, so I'll take a multivitamin. But the answer is the Mediterranean diet, which is loaded with vitamins, fruits, and vegetables, make us feel better, and it's really a healthier way to go. So I think if you feel better off the vitamins, I'd probably stay off the vitamins and see how you do. Because how's your food? How are your food habits?
I eat very well, but I eat tremendous amounts of sugar, and I think that's doing it too.
Well, I think that's doing it also. Okay. Where do you get your sugar from?
From the heroin dealer. No, I'm kidding. In New York, it comes in heroin. Listen, Zorba, can I ask you one quick question?
Absolutely.
I read all these reports, medical news and all that, and they keep saying that if you sit for 6 or 7 hours a day, you're going to die earlier. It's terrible for your organs. I want to know, is that true? And I have tremendous exercise. I'm out all day walking. I'm tremendously busy. Mm-hmm. But when I come in, I watch television lying down for 7 hours. They never talk about what happens to you when you lie down for 7 hours
a day. Well, they're interesting things. Sitting, the new promo that I like is sitting is the new smoking. And the idea is that if we sit, we're not talking about lying down because we lie down in bed for 7 or 8 hours. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the fact that getting up during the day, while you may be sitting in front of the computer, but you don't want to sit in front of the computer, sit and read a book for hours and hours and hours and not move. In other words, that is not very good for you.
But, why?
Well, because we just know that it's not just exercise during the day, but we know now that sitting for long periods of time isn't good. So when you sit for 7 hours, you're talking about sitting in front of doing what? When you lay down, you're watching TV for 7 hours at a time?
Yeah.
Well, you should get up and move around. That's better.
Yeah, I do.
Just that simple.
But I want to mention something interesting. When you look at New York City and longevity, it turns out New York City has tremendously healthy people with longevity because New Yorkers walk. They walk everywhere. They don't get into the car right away. I mean, now New Yorkers do take the cab and go from one place to another, but then they get out of the cab and walk. Whereas if you look at people in the suburbs, they often sit for longer periods of time. So if you're tremendously busy, you're walking around, and then you go home and you plop down and you don't move very much, I think that's okay. It's moving around that really counts. And if you're doing your 7 or 10,000 steps a day, keep it up, and that's probably just fine.
I walk about 60 blocks every 2 days.
I think that's
going to do the trick.
I think that sounds good. And you know what? Keep on having those fun vacations because that's what life is all about.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, time again for our Medical Mythbusters segment. Today's question comes from a listener named Judith who writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom." I'm Rob. I'm filling in for Tom, though.
Okay,
so we'll accept that. Mm-hmm. "I'm wondering what you think of those in-home steam rooms. I'm talking about the vinyl tent-style ones. I am 79 years old. I have asthma, and I've heard that the steam can relieve my coughing and upper respiratory problems. Otherwise, I'm in pretty good health. The inhalers do not seem to help. My husband and I have enjoyed your show for years. It's informative and very entertaining." Oh, thank you so much, Judith. So she has asthma, you can get, I haven't seen these, an in-home vinyl steam room.
Yeah, yeah, you haven't seen them because you're not 79 with asthma, but they are around. If you feel better in the steam room, by all means do it, and that's really what it's all about. So that hot, moist air may make you feel better, just like some people feel better in saunas, and that's hot, dry air. Either one of those, if they make you feel good, the answer is yes, you can continue with it. Inhalers are very important with asthma, but if the steam room helps you breathe better, I would say yes. It is not a myth that it's bad at all. It's really something that can be very useful to a bunch of people. The thing about a steam room, though, is you have to be careful. You don't want to be in too long, especially if you're 79, because it can produce, if you're in heat too long a period of time, it can produce a problem with your heart. So you want to check with your doc to make sure that you've got that you're not on a medication that may make you more likely to faint when you get out of the steam room.
Oh, okay.
Because the real issue with somebody 79 years of age or older is falling. Accidents are a big problem. I live in Wisconsin. You live in Wisconsin. We are number one for accidental falls in the country. And we don't know why. There's no idea why. And you can make a bunch of jokes. It's the cheese. It's the beer. It's the brandy that we eat. But none of those
winter,
things.
But yeah.
None of those things actually explain what's going on and why we're number one. So we actually have a big push in our state to try to get rid of accidents. So when you get out of that steam room, make sure you have a chair nearby that you can sit in right away in case you're dizzy. You have some place to sit down. And if you're dizzy when you come out of a steam room, get to the ground right away so you don't fall.
You avoid that.
In other words, right away. 79 years old, you feel dizzy, sit down on the ground, and therefore it's much better than falling, and it'll be much better for your health.
Back to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go now to a caller in Sparta, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, how are you today?
Well, good. How can we help you out?
I have a severe sinus reaction to everything that grows in the state of Wisconsin. After 60 years, or 50 years, I now have it under control with various medicines, but I have taken a lot of antihistamines in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's controlled fairly well with nasal sprays and a shot that I'm given once a quarter, and I can actually smell for some of the first times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening is that I'm calling about is that my skin on my forearm is extremely thin, and very often just brushing it against a not sharp piece of wood can cause it to tear. Mm-hmm. When I go outside, if I'm working in the yard, I have to wear long sleeves because any little bit will tear my skin.
Mm-hmm.
Is this because I have abused antihistamines all my life and my skin is super dry? Is it because I am an old woman? Is this the reason?
What's the shot you get? Are you getting a steroid shot four times a year?
I knew you were going to ask that, and yeah. I can't remember the name. I do apologize.
Yeah.
I think it may be.
Yeah, that may be. And how many years have you been getting that shot four times a year?
Oh, probably about three.
Okay. The thinning of the skin that you have may be due to steroids that you're actually getting in the shot. The most common shot that's often given. I want to go back a spot. Who's giving, what sort of a physician is giving the shot? Is it a specialist or family doctor?
It's ear, nose, and throat
specialist. ENT. Okay.
So one of the issues, and you've been on a nasal spray, but I just want to go back to this shot thing for just a minute.
Okay.
First of all, many people do become hyperallergic to their environment, no matter what's in their environment. They used to be that you would go to Arizona and you'd go to New Mexico, and then people started growing flowers in Arizona, New Mexico, and bang, allergies started to appear there. They would move to Seattle, same thing, bang, they get allergic to that. So some people are hyperallergic and develop allergies to everything, including animals in the house, and I think even people in the house. I mean, I think you can actually be allergic to another person in the house. It's not a reason for divorce, although some may argue the difference, but Rob is now laughing.
I've claimed to be allergic to coworkers before. None of my
coworkers.
Ones.
That's
None
exactly. Coworkers. But the issue is antihistamines do not lead to thin skin. Now, the thinness of the skin is from age. When you're younger, your skin is thicker. When you're older, your skin is thinner. Period. period. It's an age issue. It has to do with the subcutaneous fat, the fat beneath the skin. It has to do with the elastic tissue. Our skin becomes less elastic as we get older. It's one of the things that's manufactured in the skin, and that's why our skin droops as we get older and we sag. It has to do with elastic, and the skin is not as vibrant. So part of that is age. Another part of it, you have to look at medicines. Antihistamines do not make your skin thin. However, steroids do make your skin thin. And so one of the questions you have to ask is there something safer than the shot? And like you said, you're not going to go that route, but the real issue is, can you use other nasal sprays such as something called chromalin sodium? Chromalin is a spray you may not have had. Different steroid sprays, other ways that you can avoid the injections, because the injections are an old way of treating things. And once we had steroid nasal sprays, we stopped having some of the side effects of the injections. So that's kind of where you have to look at it. Then there's a trade-off between the side effect of the steroid and the ability to smell. And then you, as the patient, have to answer that question. Talk it over with your doc.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before we sign off for the day, we always love it when our listeners email us with helpful tips. This following email is from a listener named Anne from Knoxville, Tennessee, who offered up this helpful piece of advice on fending off toenail fungus. Nasty stuff. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zorba, I had fungus under the nails of my two big toes for years. Two doctors told me the drug for it was worse than the disease, so it was better to just live with it. On the advice of an osteopath, I swabbed affected nails twice a day with a Q-tip dipped in acetone. Within a couple weeks, I saw improvement. Within 2 to 3 months, the fungus was eliminated.
Oh.
I'm still growing out the worst deformed nail, but fungus has not reappeared. I highly recommend this remedy. Just make sure to do it in a ventilated area.
Sounds like a great idea.
Strong smell.
It has definitely has a small, strong smell.
Have you ever heard this?
Not at all. You know, I would put this into a folk remedy, but you know what? There are a lot of folk remedies for fungus. Try it to see if it works. There are medications, Sporinox, Lamisil. They're pills that work. They have some side effect. They're about 80% effective. I think topical care with basically a folk remedy. Like this, try it. I've heard a lot of things, from Vicks Vapor Rub to mayonnaise, to try to get rid of those damned fungus that are in the nails. Yeah.
Another listener, Sandra, actually had a tip. Alternative treatment, tea tree oil. I've used tea tree oil for stuff before. Mm-hmm. Can be painted on the nail daily. It took many months, but the fungus did clear up and no side effects.
Right. And it takes 6 months. From the beginning of your toenail, if you mark your toenail with something, it takes about 6 months for your toenail to grow. Toenails are very, very slow growing. They're slow growing nails.
Right,
you know, everyone thinks they're farther away from the heart. That's why they grow slower. And the answer is it has nothing to do with that. They just grow slower.
I just imagine this nation of people with foot fungus just putting whatever substance they have, mayonnaise, tea tree oil.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's right. Get out the fungus. That's it.
Breakfast cereal.
The whole thing.
Malt oatmeal.
Got it.
But if you've rubbed something on your toenail, let us know. Where could they let us know?
I think if they go to zorbapastor.org, they could let us know, or they could let us know through Facebook.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web.
At zorbapastor.org.
Or you can find us on Facebook. And don't forget, you can call in anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1022Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.